David, back in 1990, I had written some little notes concerning my thoughts about Colonel Doolittle. And if you don't mind,
yeah. Oh, you go. He's always ahead of you, all the time.
Actually, Colonel Doolittle was 5'6", but the way I was able to put it together was he was short in stature, but tall on accomplishment, a man of integrity, honor, and courage. He excluded confidence, determination, and strength. He was intelligent, educated, and humble, a great respect for others, led by example and inspiration to all, and we would have followed him anywhere.
Well. Dick, the reunions you had, how important were they to all of you to have those reunions for so many years of the 80 of you?
Yeah, well, there were several reasons, but the three main reasons for a reunion was to renew our friendship, and the second one was to honor the memory of those who were we had lost, and to participate in some activity that is of benefit to the nation, the Air Force, and the community in which they meet.
That day, April 18, Dick, when you took off, there were 16 airplanes, 5 men in each crew, so that's a total of 80, right? You all, as I understand it, hit your targets in Japan, right?
Yes.
And then we're to land in China. But that's where you ran into trouble, right, on the way to China. So what happened after you left where you were bombing, effectively, and what happened on your way to China?
Well, after we left the carrier, Navy had given an agreement that they would try to take us within 400 miles of China, or Japan. It happened that on the morning of the 18th, pretty early, we were picked up by a Japanese fishing boat that they had modified almost all their fishing boats, and they had long-range radios in. There was no way we could avoid connecting up with them. They got a message off to the Japanese headquarters that they had seen two carriers. In the meantime, the Navy had decided that they were going to have to launch. So we went ahead and launched.
How many more miles did you have to fly because you launched early?
We were about 750 miles from, which immediate was a big red bag of gasoline. But fortunately, Mother Nature came into the picture, and there was a big warm front that had formed over China. And that warm front developed what they called a kamikaze wind that blows from east to west. And that gave us a tailwind that all the airplanes, but the one were able to make it to China.
So after you got to near China, but ran out of fuel, right? You couldn't land. There was no landing lights anyplace. You couldn't land. So you had to bail out. Describe the bailout experience. What was that like?
Well, I'll tell you what my feelings were. He was standing at 9,000 feet in the middle of this big active front. It's about dark, raining, and so forth. And you're looking down at the bottom of the airplane is a little square that you're going to have to go through to use your parachute. That was the scariest time that I can remember. Of course, you're scared all the time, but I really mean scared.
So you did actually reach the ground almost. Where did you spend the night that night after you landed?
Well, my luck was pretty good. My chute drifted over a pine tree, and I never had to hit the ground. So I spent the night in the tree like our ancestors. I didn't sleep. I know I dozed, but I didn't sleep.
So the next day when the sun rose, how did you all find each other?
Yeah, that was another lucky thing, David. We all had a compass, and here we are in the middle of China, and we had a compass, and the idea was to walk west, because going east puts you into farther, deeper into Japanese occupied territory. Repacked my chute like a backpack and started walking. And I also elected to not look for a railroad or a road. I felt my chances of not being captured would be better if I would stay isolated in a higher part. That evening, I came out to a Chinese, friendly Chinese military thing, and was picked up by a soldier. He took me to a cabin that Colonel Doolittle had already been there, so we were together. And then a little bit later, a friendly Chinese brought in Hank Potter, Fred Bramer, and the rest of the crew.
So all five of you were together.
What was
Colonel Doolittle's attitude at when you were talking about the job you had done? How did he feel the mission went?
Well, it was kind of a two-edged deal. He was not feeling too good by the fact that we had lost all the airplane and the crews were scattered all over China. And his primary effort was to find a telephone so that he could try and keep in touch with everybody was and what kind of condition they were. He was able to do that. I found a place that had the telephone, and we were able to do that.
How successful did he think the mission was, though?
At first, he thought that it was a complete failure, and that he might even get court-martialed because he'd lost all the airplanes and didn't know where any of the crews were except his own crew. But it turned out that the mission was designed for two reasons. One was to let the Japanese people know that their island could be struck by air, and that their higher-ups were lying to them because of that reason. The other thing was, it was for the morale of the country and the Allies, and we did that. And so as a crew, we all felt pretty good about it, even though we had a lot of trouble. We did what they wanted done.
Well, 10 days later, on the 28th, just 10 days after the mission, Colonel Doolittle was at the White House receiving the Medal of Honor, and they shipped you to India. How fair was that?
Yeah.
You flew the airplane, too.
Yeah. Well, I think it was pretty fair. He had been given the job, and he worked out a plan, and he knew while he was working on the plan that it's not going to come out like this. I think it was very fair.
So you got to India, and now we're getting to the C-47.
Yes.
So you flew the hump. What's the hump?
Well, that happened to be a pile of rocks between India and China.
What about the altitude, Dick? How dangerous was that flying to fly supplies to the Chinese who were fighting the Japanese in China? How dangerous was that flying and why?
Yeah. Well, it was pretty dangerous, but that's what we were there for. And anyway, the minute you left India, you were in unsurveyed territory. And some of the hills and mountains, to the left of a straight line course between India and China, was a Likiang Mountain at 26,000 feet. It wasn't a place where you would be wanting to fly around in the clouds. So everybody tried to take advantage of the CAD of flying around and looking for holes to go through and so forth. And
oxygen? You needed oxygen, yes?
Yeah, yes, we had oxygen with us, what they called a cigar stem. It was like a cigar that, with a tube attached to it.
But what about the cold, Mike? Mike said to me earlier about the cold. How cold was it up there?
It got just working. It got drafty enough down at low altitudes in Vietnam, but I can't imagine it. Thousands of feet, how cold that airplane was. How did you stay warm up there?